Now, the problem that we face in our society is that there's not enough bears attacking us.
True. Really, I noticed that.
You know what I mean? Like that's the and I don't mean that to say that we need more bears. What I mean to say is that what I mean by that is that in the absence of bear attacks or in the absence of real danger, we live in a world where most of us don't experience danger on a regular basis.
That's psychologist and comedian, Dr. Brian King. And this is Healthcare Confidential. I'm your host, Teresa Jacob Ellis, talking with healthcare innovators and experts about health and healthcare in America. I'm excited today to introduce listeners to Dr. Brian King. Dr. Brian, as he's called, trained as a neuroscientist and psychologist, and for the past decade, prior to COVID, that is, he has been living a double life. By day, he conducted seminars on positive psychology, the health benefits of humor, and stress management. By night, he could be found on comedy club stages. Dr. Brian is the author of several books, including The Laughing Cure, The Field Guide to the North American Bloody Mary, and his latest, the international bestseller, The Art of Taking It Easy, which was recently featured by the world's largest digital book club, The Big Library Read. So, Dr. Brian, welcome to the podcast, and thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate that. I really do. And I got to be honest with you, you were the very first interviewer to mention my Bloody Mary book.
I was very intrigued by that. I actually, maybe we should start there. Where is the best Bloody Mary in America?
Oh, man. Well, I don't know now because so many places have closed. But I would tell you that if you can't go wrong, if you just head to Wisconsin. Wisconsin,
really?
Wisconsin is the Bloody Mary capital of the universe. It really is. I would give Minnesota almost equal footing with Wisconsin, and I think the two states kind of battle it out. In those two states in particular, that whole region, Bloody Mary drinking is like the social thing. It's like, let's go have Bloody Mary. Where we would say in Texas, you know, let's go get some barbecue or let's go get some, you know, some tacos. They say, let's go get a Bloody Mary. You know, it's
are you a spicy guy? Or are you like a bacon in my Bloody Mary kind of guy? Or?
I don't like spice. I don't like, to be honest, I drank so many of them. I don't really like Bloody Marys anymore.
Time for a new book.
Yeah. But it was an interesting thing that happened because I toured so much. And as I would tour, I would eat and drink. And I just kind of stumbled onto this Bloody Mary culture across the country. You know, it's a very it's a drink that has a lot of variations and anybody and people personalize it. And so that's where that book came from. But yeah, it's the odd man out in my bibliography. Yes, it really
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about The Art of Taking It Easy, your most recent book, which came out in 2019. Mm-hmm. And shortly after publication, of course, the entire planet was struck by a pandemic and really stopped taking it easy at that point.
And it really killed book sales.
Yeah. How did that affect sales? I mean,
it was actually probably the worst thing that could happen, really. There's so many bad things that happened during the pandemic. And of course, the pandemic itself being a very bad thing. So I feel like, yeah, I almost feel like, you know, lack of book sales is not, you know, necessarily something to whine about, you know. But from my perspective, you know, my book came out right before the pandemic started. It was getting some momentum. There were different news media outlets that were interested in talking to me. I mean, we're talking national coverage. You know, I'm not going to drop names, but I was being invited to go to New York to tape a show, a national show, Los Angeles to tape another show with another guy who goes by the name Doctor last, you know, in his first name. And he's from Texas. I don't know if that, you know, but anyways, you know, I was going to do all these shows, promote the book, all these things. And then literally the pandemic happened. And my calendar was immediately blanked out, everything canceled. And that's understandable, of course, but also what happened is that people stopped buying books. And so the library book club that you mentioned that happened last month, I was very thankful for because it really rejuvenated interest in a book that had just, it had the unfortunate timing of coming out right before a major pandemic, you know?
Yeah. But at the same time, the message is more relevant today, I think, than ever before, because so many people are dealing with all kinds of stress that are, you know, both related and unrelated to the last 14 months.
I think that's definitely true. However, at any period in human history, there are stressed out people, you know? In fact, the thing that I think is really interesting is that the period before the pandemic, lots of people were stressed. Lots of people were dealing with stress-related issues. You know, depression had been on the rise for about 30 years. So it had the anxiety levels. So, you know, other health-related issues that are associated with stress had been on the rise for that same time frame. So it's not like people weren't stressed back then. The difference is that during the pandemic, they had a very clear, you know, reason to be stressed. You know, and I think that's, you know, a lot of people go through life not even under, not even realizing the amount of stress that they carry with themselves or the amount of stress that they are experiencing. And then you throw a pandemic in the mix and it gives you something that's top of mind, is that you're worrying about constantly, that's affecting your livelihood and so forth. Well, then, you know, that sort of gives you a, you know, a reason. But I don't think we're more stressed. I think we're always pretty stressed, actually, to be honest.
So I wanted to... Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's, and you mentioned sort of the associated health effects. And one of the things that you talk about in the book is how our response to stress, you talk a lot about the physiological response to stress, but how that really connects to your physical well-being as well.
Mm-hmm. It does. It really does. And a lot of people don't recognize that, which is one reason why I made that point that we were stressed. We just didn't know it. You know, we had physical symptoms that we didn't really associate with stress. You know, some of them we do. Some of them people, I think, like if I have high blood pressure and I'm working long hours and I'm under, you know, I get that my high blood pressure is related to my stress. A lot of people feel that way. But a lot of people don't realize other things that are associated with their stress. You know, like, the thing I talk about the most, which has the, in my opinion, the most disconnect between our experience and the reality, is osteoporosis. You know, people are like, oh, I got osteoporosis. My bones are becoming more brittle. And that's stress related. People don't know that, you know,
really?
There's lots of things that are associated with stress that we just don't know. We suffer them. We go to the doctor, we say, hey, these are my symptoms. They give us something that we'll walk out of. But we don't really understand that part of the contributing factors is whatever stress we're dealing with and how we manage it.
So, I loved how... There. Sorry?
I said, so yeah, it's there.
I loved how in the book you kind of likened the everyday stress that we feel... Well, you relied on your humor and your training as a psychologist, but and you talked about the physiological causes and effects of stress, but you likened being attacked by a bear with being stuck in a traffic jam. So can you kind of explain to listeners how our bodies respond to stress in a way that's no longer aligned, right, with the threats that we're encountering in our modern lives?
Sure. Well, it's funny that you should mention that about the bear and the traffic, because that's literally in the title of the book. I just want to point this out. Because I recently read a negative review of my book, and I don't mind negative reviews. I think everybody has an opinion, but when your negative review is something that let me just tell you what the review said. It said that I talked too much about bears and traffic, they took stars off of their rating because this guy talks so much about bears and traffic. It's in the title. The title. Like if you somehow got this book off the shelf and picked it up and we're like, oh, and there's a bear on the cover. There's a big picture of a bear on the cover.
So if you don't like bears in traffic, maybe
and
don't.
Yeah,
read the
and
book.
Then you read the book and your major complaint is that he talks too much about bears. I feel like that's on you. I feel like that's and I don't address criticisms online. I'm not going to go to that review and like be all, you know, snarky, you know, defending or defensive author, you know, but, if that person is somehow listening to your podcast, you should know that it was the, from the cover, from the title, you should have known they were going
right
to be
there in the
here,
title
and traffic. So why do I talk about bears and traffic? Well, I talk about bears as a simplified metaphor for danger, for you know, threatening situations that we might find ourselves in. Our stress response is a simple mechanism or set of mechanisms that are designed to help us get out of danger. That's it. That's the entire purpose of our stress response. You know, so when we encounter something like a bear, which is a life-threatening, you know, the situation, you know, we're going to get stressed about it. That stress is going to manifest as an emotion. We're going to feel afraid or mad or whatever, and then that emotion and that stress is going to fuel physiological changes take place in our body. Heart rate's going to increase and so forth, and it's going to allow us the opportunity to run or prepare to fight or do whatever. That's the whole mechanism of stress. Right? Now, the problem that we face in our society is that there's not enough bears attacking us.
True. Really, I noticed that.
You know what I mean? Like that's the and I don't mean that to say that we need more bears. What I mean to say is that what I mean by that is that in the absence of bear attacks or in the absence of real danger, we live in a world where most of us don't experience danger on a regular basis. You know, we walk out our door, we don't have to worry about enemies attacking us or, you know, things happening or whatever. You know, most of us live a very comfortable and stress-free, or not stress-free, but danger-free, you know, kind of life, thanks to the people that came before us and set up this wonderful civilization. You know, now, so what do we face ourselves? What do we face? Well, one thing we face every day, lots of us anyway, is traffic. You know, one thing we face all kinds of things. Now, my point of bringing up these two examples is that traffic for most of us is not dangerous. You know, traffic is just traffic. Traffic is inconvenient. Traffic slows us down. It gets in the way of our objectives and so forth. But it's not going to kill us, and it's not going to, you know, it's not going to have any real negative impact on our health. All it is going to delay us getting to where we need to go, et cetera. And yet we get stressed about it. Some of us do anyway. All of us on occasion, I think, but some of us like a lot, you know, get stressed in traffic. You know, we talk about road rage, but we get stressed, and that stress response is the exact same stress response our body would use to counter a bear attack. And so we are engaging mechanisms in our body that are just simply unnecessary. It's not necessary to elevate your blood pressure while you're sitting in a car in traffic. And to do so has a long-term negative impact on our health. And so that's the basis. That's the reason why I keep, I talk about bears in traffic. And so if that reviewer is watching this podcast or listening to this podcast, you missed the whole point, reviewer. That's what I want to say. I want to say
that. Just as an aside, you know, yeah. I read some of the Amazon reviews for your book, and I thought they were fun. I mean, one person wrote, "You won't hate this book."
Yeah.
Which is a resounding endorsement. And another one said, "A must read for anyone who has ever felt anything."
There you go. That's nice.
And that's good. I also noticed, though, when I was reading it, that you personally seem to have an innate ability to take it easy, right? Even describing in the book how you failed to exhibit what many would consider the normal stress response to an armed robbery, for example.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
You know, honestly, if I did, I would write a book about it. I really don't have a good idea of why I'm so easygoing. You know, a lot of people are, you know, there's a lot of people. I will say that as a researcher, as a psychologist, I'm aware that there sort of is like a normal curve of individual differences. If you were to take a measure of how affected by stress people are, you know, most people fall in the middle. We can handle a moderate amount of stress, but something extreme or out of the norm is really going to get us to go a little nutty. Some people are at the low end of that scale where they get stressed out about every little thing and they worry all the time and they're so anxious and every single thing that comes along just kind of causes them to have a hissy fit, you know? And then there's, of course, people at the extreme end, like myself, who just kind of brush stuff off, you know, not, nothing really gets to me that much unless it's like super serious or really unless or maybe a you know, a boiling point where it's like a lot of things adding on to one another. And then finally there's this last straw. And then I'm like, oh, I had it with you, you know?
Right, or there's a bear.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Suddenly this situation has become a bear because of all these little tiny bears that have been stacking up on each other. Wouldn't that be a weird metaphor? That would really confuse that reviewer.
Cool.
So, where that came from for me, I have no idea. Part of it could be innate. In fact, there's a lot of research that shows that about 50% of our disposition towards emotion is genetic. And so to the extent that resilience, you know, stress resilience is a genetically inherited trait, or at least partially genetically inherited, I can attribute 50% of my luck to my parents, one of them in particular, because the other one's a major stress case. Just kidding. The other part is all environmental factors. And for that, I really have no easy answer, except to say that during my life, I was presented lots and lots of challenges that I successfully overcame. And those challenges, as you overcome challenges, that strengthens the part of your brain that says, hey, I can overcome a challenge. Now, the more challenges you overcome, the stronger that part of your brain becomes. And so the next time a challenge presents itself to you, you're going to approach it like, this is something I can handle. And so I've handled a lot in my life, you know, and I think that got me to the point where, although I had never been held up at gunpoint prior to the story you're referring to, I handled myself well in that situation. And I didn't really overreact or lose my cool.
Or even afterwards, like some people are fine in the moment. Yeah. And then afterwards they're like, oh my God, that just happened.
Right. But you were... Yeah, it's that come down. It's that come from the spike of cortisol and adrenaline and all that. And then of course, after the situation is resolved, it's like, oh man, I can't believe, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But you just seem to walk it off. Like,
well, I do get, if I get really stressed, then I have the same, you know, I have the same come down as anybody else. You know, I have the same, I recently experienced stress a couple of days ago with the tax deadline. I don't know why I waited until the last minute to file my taxes, but I just did. I knew because of COVID, my taxes this year were going to be extremely easy. And when things are easy, I generally tend to put them off because I, you know, it's not going to take much effort. I can do something more fun, you know, whatever. So tax day, I sit down. My taxes are easy. They're, the pandemic definitely made filing taxes a lot easier for some of us, you know.
Unfortunately, yeah, that's yeah. A whole other kind of stress.
I know, right? So I sat down. I started doing my taxes. Finished it up. I hit the button to e-file. And a couple minutes later, my tax return was rejected from the government. That's never happened before when I've e-filed. And I was like, oh, man. So I everything was correct, double-checked, went back, tried to do it again, rejected, you know. And the software I'm using said, well, you know, this happens once in a while, whatever. But, you know, if everything's correct, you can mail it in. And so that's when the stress came, because I was like, okay, how do I mail this in? I don't even own a printer, you know, how do I, you know, so I had to scramble to go get printed and then find a post office and all that stuff. And so a little bit of last minute, effort. And then afterwards, I remember just kind of sitting back and, you know, and contemplating about how, yeah, I got a little bit tense, a little bit worked up over that. You know,
it's the IRS and the IRS yeah. will do that to people.
They, you know, very few government agencies can put you in jail just for owing you money. And not that I am in danger of that, but I don't want anything, you know, no, I don't want any, you know, bring on anything from the IRS. You know?
Yeah. All right. So there we have it, folks. Dr. Brian King, even he gets stressed when it comes to the federal government.
Yeah.
So we are going to take a brief break, so don't go anywhere, but we will be back with more talking about stress and the fine art of taking it easy with Dr. Brian King.
How Healthcare Confidential is brought to you by Prescriptive Communications, LLC. Analyze, strategize, connect. That's our prescription for healthcare marketing. Prescriptive Communications puts healthcare businesses in front of the audiences they need to reach. If you're ready for a diagnostic on your marketing efforts, get in touch with Prescriptive today. Call us at 631-606-0525 or visit prxcommunications.com. That's 631-606-0525 or prxcommunications.com.
Welcome back to Healthcare Confidential. We're here with psychologist and stand-up comedian Dr. Brian King, and we're talking about the fine art of taking it easy, which is also the name of his latest book. So, Dr. Brian, you took a bit of a non-traditional path through schooling, through getting your degree, your career, but also a non-traditional path to fatherhood. You became a dad at the tender young age of 45. How has that experience affected you and your viewpoint on stress and developmental psychology?
I always joke that, I used to be somebody who was very carefree and less stressed, but then I had a kid, the truth is, though, is that my daughter, although I do stress about my kid and in the ways that a parent does, it's not really added much stress to my life. I'll be concerned if she gets sick, or I'll be, I don't want her getting hit by a car, that kind of stuff, And so normal parents things, but I don't worry about you. I'm not prone to anxiety. I think I'm raising her in a way that she deals with stress pretty well. Do you think you handle stress well?
Yeah.
She's here with me right now. All right.
She does not seem stressed at all at this moment. Yeah. I will say
she does have moments of shyness because she's a kid, and sometimes she'll say that she's afraid of something, but almost always, if she finds something she's afraid of, she will tackle it. She'll go back. And once that fear has subsided a little bit, she'll go back. And I think she's doing really well. As I talked about in the book, the best way to raise resilient children is to be resilient. It's to model resilience in their presence, And so she doesn't see me freak out all the time because, oh my God, this happened or that happened. She doesn't see that, And it's not that I hide that from her. I don't do it. but if I was somebody who was prone to behave in that way and I didn't want my daughter to have the same tendencies, well, I would try very hard to, do that when my daughter wasn't looking, but. Yeah, it's I don't know. Fatherhood is great. Waiting till 45, you could tell she was planned. definitely. Now, I never really thought about or wanted a family. I was a fun bachelor. I had a really good time, and then as a touring stand-up comedian, that was fun too. I always say that comedians are like ugly rock stars. All we want is like the stuff that is associated with being a rock star, except we don't have musical talent and we're not attractive. So we start doing, we learn how to tell jokes, and that becomes our means to be able to connect with people. But she came into my life. Her mom came into my life first. Obviously there's a chronology there. and she came into my life, and although she did introduce the typical worries that a father has, nothing too severe. People always say, "Oh, how do you feel now that you have a kid?" I'm like, "Oh, I feel pretty good."
Well, of course, she hasn't started dating yet, so I need to check in with you in about 10, 11 years. And then
man,
we'll
when that happens, I don't. I hope I'm dead by then. The advantage of having a kid later in life. I gotta say, it's like I don't have to live until she goes to college.
Yes, I want to.
That's why. But that is not to go on a morbid note, but I do like to point this out to people. That's the reason I wrote this book. I kind of discussed that. I hinted at it a little bit in the book. But the whole reason I wrote the book is because I was 45 years old. And at the time I was not in as good of health as I am now. And I also talk about that in the book, too. But I was 45 and I had some knowledge that I wanted to make sure I passed on to my kid. And I wrote this book with the intention of her reading it when she gets older. And if I'm not there, you know, that is, I mean, we have, there's never a guarantee that we're mm-hmm. going to survive. Even if I was in my 20s and perfectly physically fit and healthy, there's still no guarantee. I can get hit by a bus. You know, I can have an aneurysm. You know, there's all kinds of things that can happen. Just don't worry about them. Oh man, I just created worry in like half your listeners. But no, there's all kinds of bad things that can happen to us. And so, but you know, being later in life and not particularly in the best shape. I mean, I'm in better shape now, but I was in pretty bad health when I wrote the book. I wanted to have something that she could pick up and read to learn the lessons that I might not get to teach her in person. You know.
Got it.
Now the irony about that is that she hates the cover of my book. She doesn't like the bear. Whenever my books are on shelves, she gravitates towards The Laughing Cure because there's a picture of three women laughing on the cover. And she's like, I like that book. I'm like, yeah, but this one was written for you.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care, Daddy. You don't like that bear.
You'll have to change the cover on the next printing. Maybe a bunny would be better for her.
I'll put a bunny. Yeah, bunnies in traffic.
So, you know, we talked about, nature versus nurture and that innate, 50% of it is maybe what you're born with. I come from a long line of worry warts myself. So we're all very neurotic people. Mm-hmm. But do you think that people can really learn to change the way they respond to stress?
100%. Yeah. People have a tremendous capacity to learn new behaviors. It is just that simple. We have so much potential. The problem is, and the reason why most people don't learn new behaviors is because changing our behavior is hard, difficult, and it requires practice and it requires effort. Right? And by the time we get to be, a certain age, we have a nice set of habits that our brain has learned to produce over and over and over, and they become regular. And like worrying, for example, you're used to worrying, so it's hard to change that pattern of thought. It's hard to get out of it. But with effort, therapy, of course, is a strong recommendation for people who are trying to get over. But with effort and work and, of course, long-term patience, because it doesn't happen overnight, we can change our behavior. I like to point things out to people. And one of my things I do in my seminars is I pick up my smartphone. I have it in my hand here, but of course, this is an audio podcast, so you'll just have to trust me that it exists. I pick up my smartphone as a demonstration. I say, I'm addicted to picking up this phone, as are lots of other people. If you own a smartphone, chances are pretty good you have some kind of habitual behavior associated with regularly picking it up, looking at it, flipping through it, whatever. So my addiction is every so often I pick it up, I turn it on, I start hitting different apps to see what's on. I'm addicted to my smartphone. Those are behaviors, and those are behaviors that didn't exist in my brain 10 years ago. I like to point that out because so many people can relate to that example. You learned something new. You learned a new behavior. That is a perfect example of behavior change. Now, it's not an example of behavior change in, like, say, an intended healthy direction. All right. In fact, I'm not saying that cell phone usage is unhealthy. What I am saying is that if you desire to change your behavior into a healthy direction, you have the capacity. Your brain learned how to pick up a cell phone mindlessly every couple of minutes, you can learn how to go to the gym. You can learn how to stop worrying. You can learn how to.
So is it motivation? Is it willpower? Is it rewards?
It really, really comes down to, it's very difficult to remind yourself to do it. In the beginning, before we started picking up our cell phones, without thinking about it, we had to think about it. If you remember that, if you remember when we first got the cell phone, we first got it, it would sit there, and then we wouldn't pick it up until it rang or until something happened, or we're like, oh, I got it. Let me check this on my cell phone. It took a while to integrate that into our lives because it took effort. And the same is true for positive behaviors. The only difference is that the unhealthy behavior that we've learned to use and we've grown so accustomed to from our brain's perspective is just fine. It's fun, you know. My brain likes to eat, you know, more than it should. That's my single vice, is that I eat too much. My brain likes to eat. So if I want to convince my brain to eat less, it's not going to happen overnight. And it's certainly not going to be easy. It's going to take a long-term process. And I do talk about food a lot as well, because that is another common example. A lot of people share that, the food issue, and so they can relate to it. You know, it's like getting to the gym. You know, you start a gym membership, and the first day you go to the gym, it's, you know, like maybe you're excited, I don't know, but the second day you go to the gym, it's, you got to drag yourself there. The third day, it's like, you know, it's not fun. It's not enjoyable until your body starts getting into the routine, getting accustomed to the energy usage. And then you get to a point where you have to go to the gym, because your body actually, you know, it pains and aches unless you go to the gym, you know. And so we do have tremendous capacity to change our behavior, to change things in our brain. And I like to attribute that as one of the most positive things about our brain. I like to also point out that our ability to change our behavior, and when I say behavior, I mean we are talking about changing aspects of your brain, because your brain produces all behavior. So we do have this ability throughout our entire life. It's something that we never lose. We don't seem to have, a point when we get old where we're like, can't change now.
We teach an old dog a new trick, right?
We say that because most old dogs don't learn new tricks. You know, it's like, that's the thing. It's hard. It takes a long time. If I'm going to reach it to the age of 70 and then I'm going to start trying to work out and exercise and lose weight, that behavior might never become something I do out of habit or out of routine, you know, that because every day is going to be a struggle to get myself to the gym. You know, I have to constantly remind myself, but a lot of us don't change. And so we say that, but the reality is that we can, we absolutely can. And your cell phone is a perfect example, you know, and I like to point that out. People have cell phones. If you're listening to a podcast, 99% chance you have a cell phone. I mean, I'm guessing you're not listening to this on a cassette tape.
Oh yeah. No, everybody has a cell phone. Absolutely. Yeah. And they're designed to get us addicted to them and to give us that reinforcement, that hit.
Right. But we weren't addicted to them. That's the whole point. So people are like, right. I can't change. You did. You did change. You adopted this technology, you know?
And we're changing all the time, whether we
really are.
Yes. So speaking of change, after 14 months, we're starting to see some of the clouds lift, right? And the restrictions ease up. And we talked a little bit earlier about your nomadic lifestyle prior to the pandemic. Are you looking forward to getting back on the road? Are you starting to see opportunities to get back into your speaking?
There are a couple. Yeah, there's a couple opportunities that are trickling in here and there. I haven't really, nothing solid has materialized yet. Somebody will sort of feel the waters. They'll send me an email and say, hey, we're thinking about having you at our event. And then I follow up and it's like, oh, the event got canceled. there's still a lot of hesitancy to get people together, you know, and, it's tough. I do have a couple of things that might happen in the future, but as far as long-term touring is concerned, I don't have that, in my future yet. I wish I did, but I've changed gears a little bit. During the pandemic, my partner and I and my daughter, we decided to settle down in Texas. We were, you know, when you the nice thing about being a nomad is that when you effectively live anywhere you want, well, you get to pick and choose. And we chose the place that had the least amount of COVID restrictions. You know, so we came to Texas so my daughter could go to a playground. You know, at the same time, I was watching my friends in Los Angeles and New York and things like that. And they're like, you know, just complaining that the playgrounds were all taped off by police tape. And, you know, I was like, well, come to Texas. We can do it. Yeah, so we settled in Texas, and we're starting to get really used to life in like a one spot, you know. And I don't know if how long we will stay settled, but for right now, it feels pretty good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice to put down some roots. And you did a little pivoting during the pandemic too, right? You launched a podcast. Is that right?
I have a podcast. I didn't really launch it during the pandemic, but I started putting out more. So I have a podcast and I have a YouTube channel, and I just crank out as much social media content as my brain will allow me to, you know. And I'm a creative person. So when I'm not on stage, I'm like, well, how else can I entertain people? And so I did a podcast back in the day called On the Road with Dr. Brian, where I would interview people that I met along the road, and it was entertaining, you know, a lot of comedians and artists and musicians and other people. And then I do a video series on YouTube with my family. It's, you know, which is fun because it's like, not only do I have these nice videos, and I'm getting better at editing videos all the time. I'm always learning new tricks, but I have these great videos, but then I can share with people, but also it's like preserving stuff for us, you know. Again, when the kid gets older and I'm not there, she could watch me on on YouTube.
There you go.
You know.
But excellent.
Yeah. And I got just a few things to keep me busy. I really want to go back on the road.
And on that note, I'm going to remind people to order online your book, because it is a fantastic way to prepare yourself to emerge from lockdown, deal with your stress and anxiety as you re-enter society, and learn the fine art of taking it easy. And on that note, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us here on Healthcare Confidential. Dr. Brian, can you tell our listeners where they can learn more about you?
Yes, you can Google me. You don't become a successful comedian by being hard to find on the internet. there's lots of Brian Kings out there, which is why I call myself Dr. Brian King. I've got a Facebook page. I've got a website, which basically just links to my Facebook page. I got an Instagram, a YouTube. I got a bunch of different things, but those are the primary places online that I hang out at, Facebook and YouTube and Instagram. And I will say this though, too, because some of your healthcare audience, you know, your podcast listeners are mostly healthcare. My social media, the things I put out on the internet, aren't necessarily healthcare focused. You know, I'm a comedian, I'm an artist, and I do work in healthcare. So I'm not, you know, you're not going to go to my Instagram, for example, and see a whole bunch of stress resistant memes. So go to my
clinical
Facebook.
Studies.
Exactly. You know, Facebook is not like, here's how you deal with stress. Here's today, you know, like, no, it's going to be like, you know, jokes and stuff. And then, you know, occasionally something related to stress. You know, I try to be well-rounded.
Certainly jokes and stuff help us deal with stress. And anybody who wants to dive a little deeper can get the book.
Yep.
So. Excellent. Thank you again. And I want to remind listeners also that new Healthcare Confidential episodes are available every Monday morning, wherever you access your podcasts. And to thank our producer, who is John Roy. And our theme song is an original composition written and performed by the amazingly talented Patrick Pekarsik. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave us your feedback. And help us continue the conversation on the Healthcare Confidential Facebook page. Be well, everyone.